This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports Podcast, John and Wade. They talk about the things they did that day. They'll analyze the work of Triple H.
We want to SmackDown.
And hello, everybody. Welcome all of our free audience listening at youtube.com/postwrestling, the 20,000 plus subscribers.
Yes.
youtube.com/postwrestling, and also all the millions and millions of people that subscribe to the free Post Wrestling podcast feed. Wherever you're listening to this, we welcome you guys to the free version of Rewind to SmackDown. Neil and I just went through about what? Almost 35 minutes there talking about today's stories, including some about Jonathan Gresham, whatever's going on with WWE and the ESPN deal. Paul Heyman speaking at length about Brock Lesnar's return on the Errol Hawani show. Buddy Matthews and the latest involving his injury that has now required surgery. The G1, and also a little bit about Dynamite as well. But I'm here. John Pollock is not. And I am joined by Neil Flanagan. Welcome to the free zone, Neil.
Thank you, Wei, and thanks for putting up with me, free audience. John is, after 35 minutes of news, I think John is heavily moshing at the Linkin Park concert at this point.
I mean, I'm sure there is moshing going on at Linkin Park. I feel like he'd be more of a cartwheeler than a mosher. So I just imagine him off in the distance, like doing cartwheels, maybe. Somersaults here and there.
To keep it real, I feel like he might be stood back to the side with his arms folded, to sort of nodding his head.
That's how I would. That's what I would do at a concert.
Me too.
Hope he's having a good time, and we hope all of you guys will have a good time listening to the rest of this review, because we're here to talk about a very big edition of SmackDown, Neil. All right, this is the SmackDown after SummerSlam. If the Raw after SummerSlam is a big deal, okay, come on, the SmackDown after SummerSlam 5 days later has to be an even bigger deal, because we're in Montreal, Quebec, Canada, the Bell Center, 13,732 tickets out as of a few hours before the show, according to WrestleTix. On the show, they did announce this as a sellout, which of course is we could believe in. We start things off with perhaps the man of, well, the man that the person we were talking about the second most coming out of SummerSlam, in John Cena. He comes out in his Montreal Canadiens wear, his Montreal Canadiens colors, and he does a full entrance, as we saw, of course, in SummerSlam. He talks to Stu. And they make sure to put the mics up so that we can hear exactly what he says to Stu. He says, "Man, we're getting close, but damn, it's fun." And he does his full run. There are close-ups of little kids crying. Yeah. And at this point, ring announcer Mark Nash doesn't even get prompted. He just does a full-on babyface introduction for him now. It's just like it's long and drawn out, and it drives this crowd wild. Cena says, "For a long time, the WWE was afraid to come to Montreal because they thought the crowd would hijack the show. He says he's never been afraid of that because the audience is the show. He has learned to let the audience enjoy themselves despite how fearful a performer may be of their unpredictability." And he gets into this whole thing about fear. He says he's got 11 of these appearances left after tonight, and each day he gets more afraid. He's afraid he's going to let everyone down. He's afraid that people will forget about him after he's gone. He's even afraid of Brock Lesnar. And he says, I don't know in what universe me right now would actually choose Brock Lesnar as an opponent. And then he also says, "But you know there's no universe in which I back down from Brock." What did you make of this line from Cena?
And I did pique my interest, this line. I don't know that it was in there completely by accident, because of the news of this past week, where they clearly walked back Paul Levesque's post-show comments on Raw to make that really awkward announcement about how Brock came back. So I think this was perhaps a very subtle underlining of that.
Felt very much like that myself as well. Very strange how much they are like going out of their way to seemingly do damage control over Levesque, stating that this was Cena's idea to choose Brock Lesnar. I mean, obviously on Monday they had Michael Cole give credit to Nick Khan and Paul Levesque over it. Cena himself did this little sort of like paparazzi type of style interview where he essentially like did as much as well. And in this promo segment, in case you weren't clear enough, there is no universe, alternate version, whatever, multiversal version of John Cena that would choose Brock Lesnar as an opponent. This according to John Cena. But he is willing to, I guess, step up to the challenge, and he will not back down. So this was very interesting how they continue to do this. I mean, whether it be for a storyline reason, because why would John Cena choose a Brock Lesnar, or maybe more likely just to avoid the heat for John Cena. He says he's afraid that every WWE superstar now has a John Cena problem, including Brock Lesnar, and tells Brock, when you want some, come get some. Seemingly putting that feud aside for now as we move on to something else here. And that something else is Logan Paul, who comes out here. He says, I respected you, but I don't even know you. I never switched up. Of course, we remember Logan Paul teaming up with John Cena for that pay-per-view, of course. And he says, Logan says, I've been real since day one. Logan Paul reminds Cena that he once said that Logan does WWE better than any pro wrestler. And that includes John Cena. He calls Cena a liar. He says whatever he says Cena says whatever the bosses want him to say. Logan says that he wants a match against Cena, and he teases that it'll take place in a beautiful French-speaking country before revealing that it won't be in Montreal, but Paris, France. Cena accepts. Afterwards, Drew attacks Cena from behind. Cody Rhodes saves him, and Cena makes a tag match for tonight. Cena and Cody versus Drew and Logan. Ahead of, our main event here. So this was our opening segment here. And what did you think, Neil, of perhaps the follow-up from not just SummerSlam, but also the last Friday segment where Cena suddenly turned babyface?
Yep.
What did you think about this follow-up?
Quite a bit to unpick here, you know, because after SummerSlam, I did expect that Brock Lesnar maybe the opponent at the end of the month at Clash in Paris. That's clearly not the direction they're going in. And perhaps Brock will be further down the line. But
I think it's only Survivor Series for a bigger show, you know,
yeah,
if you're looking at that.
And as Cena said, he's only got 11 dates left or something like that. So, a bigger show does seem, you know, like a good idea as well, I guess. And maybe Brock doesn't want to go to Europe or something, but this was also our first kind of complete babyface entrance. You know, at SummerSlam, we got the black and white John Cena graphic, and then his stuff started. But here we got the full treatment with, like you said, talking to Stu and all the rest of it. And it was also one of our first glimpses of how hot this crowd was in Montreal. There's that kid. I was going to mention him. He was just losing his little
great
mind.
Cutaway of this little boy.
Yeah.
And when you see reactions like this, when you know the fan base of a John Cena, maybe it makes a bit more sense why they're so willing, like so wanting to do damage control over like these associations of Cena wanting to be the one to welcome the alleged, participant in this sex trafficking ring from coming to the company. Maybe.
And this Canadiens inspired shirt was everywhere as well. Anytime they shot the hard cam, not just little kids, but tons of adults were wearing it too. So they obviously really enjoyed this version of the shirt. So anyway, I was surprised we got so much. I thought the first SmackDown after PLE, yeah, they might make a bit of an effort, big crowd, all of that, but I kind of went into tonight expecting a fairly skippable episode. The beginning and the end were not, I mean, they set up a lot here.
Yeah. So no more explanation about this many months heel turn, you know, no real comment on like the failed goal of trying to take this championship away from the people and ruining wrestling. I mean, you'd get a bit more of that a little bit later on, but this was about as blunt of a 180 as you can get here, you know? And I don't sense much of the audience is having an issue with it, because there's so much just, like, I don't know, warm and fuzzy appeal right now to seeing this version of John Cena again, that I think everybody is just more happy that they have made the decision to change it than they are critical of it. You could, of course, be critical of, you know, how poorly told this entire story is, but you're also so blinded by how happy you might be seeing this that you're probably forgiving it quite easily.
The company is so fixated with moments way, you know, and the heel turn itself was a fabulous moment. But where it went from Elimination Chamber was just, I you know, at least from a narrative perspective, a bit of a disaster. But I think we're all just, you know, the crowd in attendance tonight, especially happy to see run the ropes, saluting, smiling Cena back. And I really don't think they want any more explanation about any of that.
Yeah, like the heel promos from Cena, I think have had, I mean, it would be kind to say that they are a mixed bag. Right. Yeah. I think there were many weeks where they offered to me like interesting creative challenges that we saw Cena try to exercise. But more often than not, I think they were disappointing, at least in comparison to what we got tonight, which was just like a great babyface John Cena promo. And this crowd was just so happy to hear this, to see this fire from Cena, to cheer for this guy. Great promo from Cena, I would say. I thought Logan Paul was a great dance partner. I thought he was actually very strong. Cody, I do feel like, was maybe the biggest weakness of this particular show. Cody having won the championship from Cena, already feeling like an afterthought after Brock Lesnar coming out. He needed a bigger presence on this show. And on this show, he just kind of came out to play sidekick to John Cena, didn't even speak one word to the audience tonight. And I think that's a big mistake for somebody who's ultimately going to stick around as your lead character on the show.
I had a theory about this from across the Atlantic way, which is that the American nightmare bedecked in stars and stripes, the personification of Americana. And I wondered, like, he's in Canada. This is a country that the Trump regime is treating worse than some of its, like, actual international enemies with tariffs and whatnot. And I know that there has been, from friends that I have in Canada, you know, a real reaction against this. You know, I think Cena transcends all of that, but I did wonder, not with any real seriousness, but I at least questioned whether Cody might, because of his sort of stars and stripes persona,
I'll speak
get
as
some
a,
blowback.
Well, I'll speak as a Canadian from Toronto, and in that I feel none of that coming from people here. Certainly, if Captain America showed up, we cheer our asses off for Captain America. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of us have enough I guess understanding and ability to think critically to know that you could wear your country's flag without necessarily being a supporter of, you know, the president, right? In Cody's case, I mean, that's a little bit more ambiguous, because I can actually believe I don't exactly know what his politics are, but I feel like they are slowly revealing themselves a little bit more every week. But nonetheless, I mean, if this song came on, this entire crowd would be doing the whoa. You know, if he cut a great babyface promo, the crowd would be entirely with him. I don't think that, personally, that would have been any sort of concern. Not to say that maybe wasn't something they weren't considering. But they could have shielded themselves from that by just having Cody say one or two words in addition next to Cena, just to give him a bit more presence. You know, the way this turned out, I mean, he really did feel like an afterthought, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, thanks, first of all, for clarifying that. It's good to know. And I kind of agree in the sense that, like, get Cody to say a few words in French to this crowd, and they'll, you know, I think that would do the trick.
Bonjour.
Sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Do the whole Brett bonjour.
But I do feel like, the Cena, you know, last time thing really is much more meaningful with him as a babyface, and perhaps it was just, you know, he gets center stage.
Yeah. I do wonder if he stayed as a heel, sorry, stayed as a babyface throughout this entire year, if we would feel this nostalgic for like something like the run up to the ring or just like any of this stuff. Or is it the fact that we've been without it for 5 months that has made us appreciate it more now? I do wonder that.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as 1 day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we're going back to November of 1995 as Rewind Away takes a look at the Survivor Series featuring Diesel defending the WWF Championship against Bret Hart. We'll also have weekly editions of Collision Course with the carousel of co-hosts joining Kate from Montreal, reviews of TNA Victory Road, New Japan's Destruction in Kobe, and it is the Ask Away Mailbag Show as John and Wei answer your questions all this month at postwrestlingcafe.com.
So that is our main event for tonight, a relatively big main event for TV, which means you could probably expect a non-finish coming. That's a teaser for later. Motor City Machine Guns are in the back. Both of these men are recovering from their injuries from the TLC match, but both know that they have to get back up to get another title shot as we get to our tag team match here between the Motor City Machine Guns and JC Mateo and Tala Tonga of the MFTs. So we've got Shelly with taped ribs. We've got Saban with a taped up right arm and also some Kinesio tape on his shoulders. Saban uses his arm in the match as he starts wincing through it. The Machine Guns are giving us a lot of quick offense. Both of them still nursing their injuries at the same time. The finish comes when Shelly goes up top, but Tala Tonga kicks him off and to the floor, and he comes in with the chokeslam to Saban for the victory. What did you think about the match, Neil?
I didn't think much of it. I suppose they protected the Machine Guns a tiny bit by really sort of accentuating that they're injured from the brutality of that ladder match, the TLC match, I should say. But this was really a vehicle to continue to put over Tala Tonga, I think, you know, with that giant choke slam.
Yeah, very much so. I'm with you. I thought they offered some protection for the Machine Guns, but I did feel like the finish probably, I assume the finish would maybe be targeted a lot more to those specific injuries. You know, whether it be the ribs of Shelly, like maybe it would have made more sense for Shelly to take this chokeslam, but it was Saban nursing a shoulder injury, taking a chokeslam for the victory. I mean, I'm sure it's all connected, but whatever. Short match, really not that much to speak of it.
And this was the only match that was actually advertised for the show.
Is that right?
And one little nugget of information from Tessitore, he was saying that this was the first time for the Machine Guns competing in Montreal and their first time as a tag team in Canada, which is, you know, given their longevity, is kind of surprising.
Is that true? Really?
That's what he said, yeah.
That's shocking to me if that's the case, because I could have sworn I've seen them wrestle in Mississauga or something. I could be wrong. I'm not sure. But all right. I trust Tessitore's research. So Solo Sikoa, he's out, of course. He says, you're looking at the soon-to-be tag team champions, where, of course, JC Mateo and Tala Tonga are now, I guess, involved in the SmackDown tag team mix here as a tag team.
I enjoyed how Tonga Loa just had to stand there and clap.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not me.
I mean, I'm a former tag champion too, guys. You know? He's just a background character. He's just waiting, okay? Like, he's sitting back there. He's waiting for his turn. And it'll
the big come. One. Yeah, a world championship.
Solo calls himself the most dominant U.S. champ. He's dressed up in his gear and ready to go, but there's nobody to fight him tonight. So he's disappointed, but he's also happy to leave crappy Montreal. This is when Nick Aldis comes out, and he says he has a special guest for tonight, all right? Somebody that Montreal knows really, really well from Montreal, Sami Zayn. I should have said from Raw, actually. From Raw, crossing borders here, is Sami Zayn making a surprise appearance. And we get a bonus match here, Sami Zayn versus Solo Sikoa. You know, very nice surprise for this crowd, of course, who are... they're as loud for Sami Zayn as you can imagine.
Yep.
And of course, Zayn and Solo have the former connection through the bloodline, although that really was not played up at all here. Tala Tonga interferes to give Solo the advantage throughout a commercial break. Sami kicks away the Samoan spike. He delivers the exploder into the corner. He starts pumping the crowd up for the Huluva kick, but Tonga Loa interrupts. Sami delivers another exploder and then tries to set up for the Huluva again. This time, JC interrupts. At this point, Tala Tonga distracts. Solo attacks him. Solo goes for the spike, but Sami avoids it and delivers a quick schoolboy to beat the U.S. champion. So Sami pins the U.S. champ, likely leading to a future title shot. Meanwhile, he does have a match with Rusev on Monday, so he's somewhat tied into a storyline already with Raw. And whatever's going on with Karrion Kross, maybe it's over, maybe it's not, but Sami Zayn suddenly has a lot of things happening with him. What do you think is the end result of all of this, and what do you think about the match?
I don't see any real follow-up on this particular encounter. The match to me was pure house show, you know, where if I go to a show in Belfast, even though he's not from Belfast, he's Irish, you know, Finn Balor, even if he's not in that part of the touring company, they'll make sure he's there so he gets a hometown pop and overcoming the advantage.
Would he pin a champion, though? The only reason I would, contest that is because Solo made a big deal about being the biggest U.S. champion, the most dominant U.S. champion.
He might, under these sorts of circumstances, a quick roll up, you know, and just to please the crowd in a non-championship match. I kind of doubt it, but it's possible. I enjoy this. I thought that the crowd certainly elevated it because they were so, you know, into seeing Sami in his hometown. It wasn't wonderful. I don't think that. I don't rate Solo that highly in ring. It was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, who gives a shit about the brand split anymore? So like, I'm glad they make these sort of surprises. Depending on whether or not they happen to be in somebody's hometown. All right, you get a hall pass. I definitely expect some sort of follow up. I just don't think that they would pin their champions, you know, this easily. So I could see a rematch, maybe taking place on Raw at some point, just to kind of return the favor for Adam Pearce, I suppose. And then Solo probably retaining it to perhaps lead to Sami's next feud somehow. But we shall see.
That's interesting to me, Ray, because to me this had the feel of a one and done in his hometown, and I thought like Sami is. His whole story is he's looking for a world title, so why put him in the US title mix? But you could absolutely be right.
We go to the back where Alexa and Charlotte are. They Charlotte teases that it's soon to be Alexa's birthday, and so she's got a surprise for her that she wants to give in front of the people, and this makes Alexa very nervous. We see a video package promoting the ESPN PLE news, and we see Roman Reigns, Cody, and Paul Levesque talking about it in interviews. Mm-hmm. Now, like, not that I would expect Roman to show up in, like a neck collar or anything on a talk show, but they are pretty they're not really trying to hide the fact that Roman is really injured or out significantly from these tsunamis, right? That took place at the PLE. We know that he's scheduled for Raw on the 18th, which is not this week, or this coming week, but the one afterwards. So I guess that gives you an idea of the status of Reigns.
I would think so. Yeah.
We see a video from the Wyatt Six. And this one is interspliced with highlights from the TLC match. They say that they always tell the truth. What else did they say here? Lost my place. We've shown you that their power is just a harmless illusion. I guess we're referring to the tag teams. We woke them up from their dreams and made them realize the true reality they've kept hidden. There are more lessons to be learned. The Wyatt story has only begun. So what do you think about this Wyatt 6 promo?
My note was during this is terrible. They're just taking turns to say spooky shit and then laugh, which is my sum up of this segment. I really disliked it. It's, you know, that particularly when Gacy and Loomis speak, you get no real sense of menace from these guys, and they're the ones with the belts. It's I think to jump forward slightly, B Fab spoke for all of us in the next segment where she's watching this on TV and says, mm-hmm. "What does that even mean?" I don't know, B Fab.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, this has been the case with the Wyatt Six ever since they came to the SmackDown division, where they've really just been reduced to just one dimensional, spooky, characters. And that really robs them of, I think, all the character depth and all the interest that I think existed with them when they initially debuted. Like, their appeal to me is not that they look scary or they even strike fear at all. Mm. It's that they are hurt people all carrying a level of trauma that is playing itself out in this form. And you've completely just disregarded all of that so that you can have what feels like at this point, almost like, I don't know, like an early 90s gimmick of like zombies or something. And it's made them so uninteresting. And it's made these promos, frankly, like very forgettable and still confusing and not interesting at all. Not at all a fresh take on what I felt like, you know, like even when Bray Wyatt was doing it veering more so into like just being a plain spooky character. Nowhere near the interest of even that.
No, absolutely not. Very two-dimensional. And it feels like, and I know this is a two-hour show now and there's only a limited amount of time, but all the work they did to kind of, like you say, introduce these characters back in as damaged human beings with these sort of found footage of therapy sessions and stuff, explaining their motivation, all of that has just been squandered, I think, which is a shame.
So we cut to the back, and as Neil says, B-Fab reacts and says, what the hell do they even mean? DIY walk into the frame, and they're yelling at the Prophets for almost killing Candice LeRae in that spot here. So Candice LeRae, of course, did that crazy, crazy fall off the ladder and showed us the repercussions of it, because she carries with her a giant welt on her leg. She does come in here and she says that, B-Fab reminds them that it was actually Gargano and Ciampa who did the pushing of the ladder, but they disregard that. They start bickering a lot more. Nick Aldis comes in and makes the Profits versus DIY on SmackDown next week. I think Aldis just like walks around hoping for people to get into an argument. And if he hears any sort of like elevated volume in tone, you got a match either this week. If not this week, then certainly next week.
Particularly tonight, that seemed to be the case. He just popped up everywhere and just in time to make a match.
He was kind of making fun of it even at one point where he said, like, I've become a lot more tolerant of wrestlers themselves in their own matches. But I think that's been one of the weaker points of more recent SmackDown too, like where when Aldis first appeared, I felt like his role was one you could actually take very seriously. Now it feels like he's really being overused as just like a Teddy Long style of like, stamp of like an official, you know, match. That's it. I find it unnecessary. You know, really. So these divisions, this tag team division, I mean, the matches are very entertaining, but they continue to be treated as like a high school drama backstage, arguing with each other.
This isn't exactly a giant hook for people to tune in next week.
I think the matches are great, but man, the writing sucks. I think the character development sucks. And I think this what's going on with the Wyatts is entirely attached to it all. Mm-hmm. Where, like, suddenly if you're a tag team, you're reduced to like a cartoon, and I don't know if that just means it's bad writing or if it's an intentional sort of like way they want to treat this mid card, but I'm not a fan personally. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling. Charlotte, she's got a birthday gift for Alexa here. And this was also to be their championship celebration, but Charlotte decided to share the spotlight tonight. So we see a cake that reads, "Congratulations, Charlotte Flair," and in small print, "And Alexa, P.S. Happy Birthday." So she also has a gift in a box, which Alexa is very reluctant to open. Charlotte reminds Alexa of the doll that she was presented with 4 years ago during one of their feuds. It was at that point Alexa gifting Charlotte a Lily doll. So Charlotte has decided to return the favor by gifting Alexa Charlie, which is a doll, I guess, modeled in Charlotte's vision. Long blonde hair. Charlie, and this crowd immediately takes to it. They're chanting, "Charlie, Charlie, Charlie." Alexa gives a very genuine thank you, you know, finally warming up to this Charlotte relationship. Charlotte says she needs something else from Alexa and says, "You may hug me." So at this point, I think they were hoping for the crowd to chant "hug it out," but in Montreal, I guess they don't do that sort of thing. So Alexa is reluctant to go in for the hug, and they are both interrupted by the secret Hervis. Neil, thoughts on all of this so far, including your current feeling on the Alexa Charlotte relationship?
I quite like these two together, even though it's kind of corny. It's kind of community theater level acting as well, and I think they should be thankful for that Montreal crowd, because they don't have that many tough cities anymore. You know, when they used to go to Philly or they used to go to Chicago, they would sometimes get a bit of a hard time. But I could have seen this sort of exact segment with the cake and everything being presented getting wadded out of the building perhaps a few years ago. Crowd were into this. They let it go. And, you know, even though they didn't chant "hug it out," they were doing the yes, the Daniel Bryan yeses for the hug. So I think they owed the crowd a little something for this. I do kind of quite like this dynamic of the two together. It's growing on me.
I hated the segment that these two shared on Monday. I thought it was just really bad. And I even said on Monday, I don't think it'll hurt them in the least, because like the crowd just seems to like these two together so much. And now they really do genuinely like Charlotte a lot. They're probably exaggerating their love a little much on commentary, you know, and that's just them wanting to do some sort of psychology to make us actually, but it's working. Like, the crowds are liking Charlotte, and I think this doll is a great idea to take us all the way further. You know, people love dolls. people love buying dolls, and this Lily thing, I imagine, is still to this day one of a hot seller to make another Lily. Hey, listen, it's worked for Hiromu. Of course it'll work for both of them.
Oh,
So Charlie, I even love the name. I think it's a great way to, again, soften the image of a Charlotte Flair to continue to make her that much more appealing to audiences. So Chelsea comes out. She says she's a proud Canadian, but she wants to turn in her passport after hearing how this crowd was cheering for these two. She insults the local hockey team, of course, which will always get an easy reaction. I guess Vancouver did a lot better, did they? I don't know.
I just know it's the I just know what the Habs is the nickname for the Canadiens.
That it is. Yes.
Les Habitants, I believe.
Yeah, they're very good.
Kate obviously would know much better than I do. But
so Nick Aldis comes out, of course, and he's there to make the match official, and he even has the gift of a new referee for this match, for Alexa, and as a new referee that we've never seen before, comes out wearing a bow on his shirt.
This did make me laugh out loud when I realized I didn't recognize this ref, and he was actually new, and that again was gift wrapped.
See, this sort of like goofy comedy, I think, really works for this. I hate it in the tech division. I don't think it's good in the tag division, but here I think it's perfect. I mean, maybe that's just completely subjective for me.
Oh, no, I think it's, I mean, this whole thing is somewhat goofy and attached to Chelsea as well, who's a bit of a comedic character. I think that, you know, that context makes a difference.
Well, let's see if it would work for this pairing here, because after months apart, we have a reunion between Carmelo and The Miz. And The Miz, of course, was just in Nick Aldis's room with the busiest person on the show. Melo asks where The Miz has been. He says Miz promised to take him to the top, and then you just dipped out after like for 2 months here. Miz starts talking about himself and reveals that he got him and Melo a tag match next week. He's about to do their joint catchphrase. Melo just seemingly forgives him and accepts it. So Melo, Don't Miz are back. And for me, I think the indication is that it might be a one week only type of thing. So I'm assuming that Miz just had to leave for American Gladiators, and therefore they just completely dropped it because nobody really cared anyway. And now they're just remembering to finish up this breakup storyline. So
that's what I took from this, because it seemed to be teed up when Aldis walks in. So obviously Miz hasn't already set something up. So he's up to some. He's up to no good, or there's something going on here, you know, which I guess all will be revealed next week.
Well, who turns on whom, and also who gets to keep Dre?
There's Dre, which we haven't seen in a while. I hope Dre makes a return next week. That would be cool.
I think Miz should deck Carmelo using Dre.
Yes. I could go for that.
Because if there's a breakup, I mean, I still don't see The Miz being a babyface. I don't see him being an effective one. And I could see Carmelo being an effective babyface at this point.
And they've not tried it. I feel like when he was drafted in, I think he was sort of a babyface, but they turned him fairly quickly. And they didn't put no real effort into it, apart from that first night where he got the match with Cody. So, yeah, I feel like it's very worthwhile, very worth a go with Melo.
So we've got up next Charlotte versus Chelsea. These two have had to be ringside this entire time, like through a commercial break, through you know, all the stuff with Miz and Melo. So after another commercial breakthrough with them wrestling this time, Charlotte starts her comeback. She does her standing buckshot lariat, natural selection, getting a two count. Green then delivers a superplex for a two count. She does not get the pin off of the superplex, so this incredibly frustrates her. She does the temper tantrum, and so she calls for the Secret Harvest to bring in the cake that has been sitting ringside this entire time. And her great idea... Superplex didn't work. How do I win this match? I'm going to unprettier Charlotte Flair into the cake.
Yeah.
And we all kind of know where this is going. It gets reversed. Chelsea takes the cake instead. This crowd goes crazy. The best part of this match, Charlotte is about to apply the figure eight, and she pauses to taste the cake off of Charlotte's face before completing the move and getting the win. This cake spot was so ridiculous, but it was awesome. It was like, again, the perfect thing for this ridiculous storyline. And I think the tables work all the time. Anytime you bring a table out, cake to the face will always work in any sort of situation, any room in life, a kid's party, a sitcom, anything, pro wrestling. Rest of the match was whatever, but the cake spot, 5 stars.
I think if somewhere in Connecticut Vince McMahon was watching SmackDown tonight, he will have loved this, you know, because this is just his sophisticated brand of humor all over. You know, he loved the cake spot famously, but we haven't seen it in a while. And I think in this context, I agree with you, Wei. It was very entertaining, and Chelsea makes this sort of thing work very well. Of course, you know, leave your logic at the door, because, you know, an unprettier into a cake. How is that?
Devastating. Okay. Let's play this out. Let's do the Taz technique by Taz on the cake spot. Okay. All right.
Okay.
Number one, the embarrassment of the spot itself. Okay. Gotcha. Will be enough to distract anybody. If music is enough to distract somebody and to cause somebody to stay down for the three, I think the embarrassment from dropping face first into a cake will be enough for most people.
Yeah.
You've also, it's a very sticky substance. You know, it's like, it's got, like, who knows what's, it's got, like, icing. it's got like the lettering goop.
Yeah.
You know, that can fall into somebody's eyes if you're not closing your eyes, and that would be enough to blind somebody. So I think there's
compromise their vision.
We also don't know what sort of board was like this cake was put on. Mm-hmm. Could have been metal. Could have been steel. Yeah. Could have been
solid
a steel plate.
Stainless steel. Yeah.
So I don't think it's entirely out of the question.
You've convinced me.
Anyway, so another really good, like, sort of like endearing spot for Charlotte. You know, like not just certainly avoiding the cake, but I think doing the taste afterwards, which got a great reaction, I thought was really great for her. Stratton is in the back. She's being interviewed and Jade Cargill interrupts her. Jade says, be thankful your foot found the ropes. And I'm sure we're all thinking you should really thank Jade for putting your foot on the ropes, which is exactly what happened in the match itself. Right. Jade says the story will be different the next time they face each other. Stratton says the outcome will be the same regardless, and she leaves. Then we see Kiana James and Julia. They arrive, and Kiana James is managing Julia now, of course, and so she's doing the whole business card deal where she's offering her services to Jade Cargill. Jade Cargill, is not interested. And Meechan comes in instead, takes the card from Jade and says she might call it to get a title shot from Julia. So they're moving Jade from Stratton for now, it seems, although opening the door, of course, for a rematch. And I don't know about you, but seemingly teasing a heel turn for Jade. What do you think, Neil?
Possibly, yeah. I didn't quite know what to make of all of this. Meechan, particularly at the end, didn't, you know, just taking the card and saying she might try to get a US title shot, I don't think she'll get it.
What do you mean? She's going to get a US title shot.
Having this business card?
Well, I mean, I think this is just meant to draw the association, you know? I mean, she could just walk into Nick Aldis's room and get a title shot, and it's not like there's a big line for it, obviously.
Yeah, but I don't know. Is Kiana James going to be minded to take her call and just go, yeah, We'll set up a title shot for you.
I'm going to say most likely, Neil. Like if we're seeing her mention this on screen, it's probably leading to a title shot. But yeah, I mean, I find everything to do with Jade somewhat interesting. Obviously, it could be a straightforward, she joins Kiana James as part of this heel faction with Julia, or it could, of course, be teasing a feud with Julia herself. So,
yeah, very hard to read this because, you know, at face value, she's not interested in this card and she gives it away. So maybe it's just the beginning of this association.
It's hard to get.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know which result I'd be more interested in. I mean, at this point, I certainly think Jade is ready for a heel turn. You know, you've kind of taken her babyface story about as far as you can for the time being. She's failed at the challenge. Audiences still really like her.
Yeah.
I don't think they like her enough to want to see her be a babyface champion. A heel threat, though, a heel champion with people around her, maybe a Julia next to her, you know, or at least others around her doing the dirty work, I think would be a really interesting experiment for Jade. Because we saw her as a heel in AEW, but I don't know if I think that would be very different from how WWE may present her as a heel. So I'm kind of hoping for that myself.
I think it would certainly be more interesting because we had the Queen of the Ring win to set up the title shot and didn't quite get there. So, you know, where do you go on the babyface side? They could do a rematch with Tiffany, but I would rather see what you're outlining.
We're still waiting for Bianca to return after this like finger injury that's taken her out for like almost like half the year now. So, but she's a babyface at least at last we saw. So her coming back for a feud against the heel Jade, I feel like makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
We go to Aleister Black. He's in a room right now. He says he believes he can use violence to stop a greater violence from happening. He's not an eye for an eye type of guy. He's an eye for a head, an eye for a limb kind of guy. He's like Boss Rutten. I don't know if you remember those videos, but yeah, it was one of Boss Rutten's lines.
An eye for a head, an eye for a limb. And I think he went as far as to say an eye for a life in this. So he's getting pretty extreme.
Yeah. Boss's line was, I don't believe in an eye for an eye. I believe in an eye for two eyes. or something like that. He says Priest is at home nursing a jawline fracture from the Black Mass. When somebody pushes Priest, Priest pushes back. But when somebody pushes Aleister Black, he pushes them off a cliff.
Yeah.
And so he says if that makes
two murder threats here.
If that makes him a scapegoat, so be it. So I don't know. Where have I heard that one? I don't remember. Don't think I've seen that person on TV.
No.
I actually like this Aleister Black video. Most of the time, they just kind of go in one ear. I register that they sound cool, but then they just completely go out the other ear. But this one, I'll probably forget about this one too, truth be told. But I did think it sounded pretty cool.
Sure. It's not super memorable, but it kind of worked for what it was. It's like, I don't know, less than a minute probably of him talking, but he's just like ramping up the extremities here. You know, it's like he's a threat. He will kill you, you know?
Yeah. Of course. Okay, then we get in the back here, a scene involving John Cena as he runs into R-Truth. They do the whole mime routine where they're looking at each other up and down. They're lifting each other's hand or lifting their hands in conjunction with each other. Truth says, "You back. You really back. And if you're really back, then I'm back." Cena says he was really worried about Truth for a while there. He was acting weird for like 5 months. You changed your hair. You were really mean to people and you were beating them up. Remember when you made that kid in Brussels cry? You said you wanted to ruin wrestling, but did you really think that was going to work? And he says, it's good to have you back. And he leaves. So obviously about as much reference as you will get to maybe some sort of self-criticism of this failed heel run of John Cena's here. And maybe by extension, failed whatever run of Ron Killings here. This felt to me as official of a death of the Ron Killings character as we will probably get.
I agree. I think this is Truth going back to the tried and tested formula that they employed with him for years. And they never really, he played a bit of a blinder in getting back into the company. And well done to him, but they never really gave him the Ron Killings identity. Like he was, they just referred to him as Truth mostly. Mm-hmm. There was that one big return sort of thing, but after that, he's probably better served, honestly. Just going back to R-Truth as was, and his final run in that.
With as much depth as there is like in the WWE, I'm likely to agree with you. At the same time, I can't really say that for sure because I don't think Ron Killings was ever given a real shake, right? Yes, he did have a fluke win over, I think he has one over Cena, but how insignificant of it was it was that? Because it was never really brought up afterwards. He got one over, Aleister Black, never to be touched on again, because after that match, Black moved into the feud with Priest and Truth was just didn't even appear on TV.
No.
So I guess
his involvement in all of that Priest, Aleister Black stuff was totally unnecessary. You know, it's just weird, you know, that they inserted him in there.
Yeah. So to me, it's just kind of like, I don't think Ron Killings failed because of the performer or the performances. I think it failed because it never really got like the appropriate introduction to the audience.
Yeah.
Like what exactly is a Ron Killings compared to an R-Truth? Whatever. Like it's been weird these few months, you know. It almost feels like they brought him back under pressure from the audience, certainly. And then they gave him a few wins to be able to say, "Hey, look, we pushed your favorite wrestler. Now shut up and enjoy the story we wanted to tell the whole time anyway. Yes, we'll rehire this guy, we'll pay him his contract, but he's just going to sit at the bottom of the card playing this jester that like we've always wanted if he's going to be here." That's kind of how it plays out to me.
I agree. Creative clearly weren't, I'm sure he was pitching away to the writers, you know, about what Ron Killings should be as he came back, but probably the higher and higher up the chain it went, the less and less interest anyone really had in a proper push.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we're going back to November of 1995 as Rewind Away takes a look at the Survivor Series featuring Diesel defending the WWF Championship against Bret Hart. We'll also have weekly editions of Collision Course with the carousel of co-hosts joining Kate from Montreal, reviews of TNA Victory Road, New Japan's Destruction in Kobe, and it is the Ask Away Mailbag Show as John and Way answer your questions all this month at postwrestlingcafe.com.
So we got our main event. Cena and Cody Rhodes teaming up. Have they ever teamed up before, Cena and Cody?
It doesn't leap to mind. Someone in the chat may know, and we'll get angry comments.
Yeah, I mean, I'm seeing some John Cena and Batista versus Cody Rhodes and Ted DiBiase matches, but they're on opposing sides here. Yeah, I don't know if they've ever had it been in a tag team together. So possibly for the first time ever. John Cena teaming up with Cody Rhodes here against Logan Paul and Drew McIntyre for free on SmackDown. So the crowd starts chanting, fuck you, Logan, as Netflix and I'm assuming USA will attempt to censor each one. He'll start working over Cody through the entire break, and it's a classic John Cena house show tag team match where a really, really, really slow crawl from Cody towards the corner. They're just really dragging this out. And Cena is just on the apron, really, really hamming it up. Like he's Hulk Hogan in 1989, reaching for the hot tag. Thankfully, this time, unlike I think the last time we saw him in a tag team match, they decided to lower the mics in the ring post and around the ring. So you can't hear Cena scream directions at the top of his voice to Cody for the timing of that hot tag. So he tags in and this crowd just erupts and it's just the greatest hits. Your five moves of doom, shoulder tackle, proto bomb, five knuckle shuffle, and the AA. But Drew McIntyre comes in to break it up. Logan Paul comes in, low blows John Cena, and we get a DQ finish here for this all-star tag team match on free TV. Logan and Cena brawl to the back as Cody and Drew continue fighting ringside, where Drew decks Cody with the title. Drew then stares at the belt. He sets it down and then claymores Cody through the bottom of the announce table, which is, I guess, I feel like they've had LED screens here almost every week, but this week they've replaced it with a wooden board, and for good reason, because made for a really cool spot here with Cody being claymored through it. The solid wood in front of the desk is what Tessitore said. So for
Tessitore was hysterical about this. This was presented as, this some sort of mahogany, the hardest wood you can imagine. He's been basement claymored through. I don't want to make light for our serious viewers, but it was kind of very clearly just chipboard.
We don't know that.
Tessitore was.
This was certainly an IKEA special, an unbreakable table purchased at IKEA. But a really cool spot. I mean, they've managed to find all the amount of ways they managed to find like that you can use a table for a spot continues to impress me. So now we've got the side of the table that somebody can break. So for Paris, it looks like we've got Paul versus Cena and very likely Drew McIntyre versus Cody Rhodes. What do you think about those? Well, the match and also the matchmaking.
The match was kind of what I expected it was going to be after it was made at the top of the show. And I kind of thought we're going to get a non-finish. And we did. But the post-match angle did its job. Here we have, I think, two big matches for Clash in Paris. And I like Drew McIntyre. I think he belongs around the main event picture. I think, as a first challenger for Cody's title, he's a good pick. I don't think he'll win. I don't think too many people think he'll win, but I think he's an entertaining promo. The build to it over the next few weeks should be fun, and I think a good first challenger.
He's no doubt a good first challenger. I almost wonder if he's too good of a first challenger. Drew to me is a guy who I think very well could be the top heel. And maybe at one point, like many would have considered him to be the top heel. Since coming to SmackDown, I definitely feel like his rank has lessened to just being, another heel. Being in this tag team with Logan Paul, I'm sure did something for his mainstream appeal against, being on Jimmy Kimmel and all that. But coming off of it being Cody's first defense and a likely person to just lose to Cody, I almost feel like it's too small of a role for him when I could actually see him being like the sort of end of the line type of villain for Cody. Again, there's nothing to say that this can't lead to that eventually, but I am hoping for this run up to Clash in Paris to see if Drew can get like that hot again, like hot enough to the point where he was with Punk, where he was really the talk of sort of the show. Can he have that sort of promo interaction with Cody to give us that sort of material? Let's see.
I think that's a fair criticism. I mean, he has not reached the heights that he did during the Punk feud. And that wasn't just down to CM Punk. It was down to his work as well. He was great on the mic, all that, you know, shouting at the cameraman to stop shooting up his kilt and all that kind of stuff. I enjoyed all of that because he imbued a bit of humor into a very heelish run. And on SmackDown, he hasn't done that so much. I my only counter argument on the he's not, you know, he's maybe too good for this is Cody's just won the title back. I guess they want somebody of note for him to defend it to. But you know, I get what you're saying.
Totally. We've got 3 weeks till Clash in Paris, so three editions of SmackDown for them to tell whatever type of story they're trying to tell. Of course, Cena versus Logan Paul is probably going to be, for many people, like, I don't know, the main event of this show, at least the match with the most mainstream appeal attached to it. What do you think about the matchmaking here?
I quite like it. We're not getting, as we mentioned, Brock Lesnar until later on. Logan Paul, whatever you think of the man, is a great heel. I think I think there's some truth in this kind of, he does sports entertainment really well. He does. He's very, very good on the mic. He heals it up brilliantly. The sneak attack stuff, all of that, you know, he can play all the hits of the heel run rather well. I think this gives, you know, we probably see a Cena win here to build him back up after losing the title. But it could be a good match.
It's the type of match that I'm already seeing like a lot of online reaction being negative for, and I guess it's understandable, you know, of like however many matches Cena has left. Would you want to spend one of them on Logan Paul? And if you're TKO, the answer is yes, undoubtedly yes. There are a few people on this roster that are maybe as popular and as well known to a non-wrestling fan as a Logan Paul. And I completely think that this should be a match that you make to appeal to those audiences. It's not like we're getting what John Cena versus like Jelly Roll. Logan Paul is a very good performer, especially in these sort of big matches where, like, I mean, they devise a lot of very clever spots. I think the match could be very like spectacular. So I'm actually looking forward to it just even as a match itself, never mind, you know, whatever crossover appeal it may have.
Yep, I agree with you again. And I also agree that Logan Paul is really very good, you know, for the amount of experience in the ring he has. And I'm sure his early matches were very rehearsed. You know, you think of the when Ricochet was still with the company, the clash of Springboard, you know, and all of that. But his instincts seem to be pretty good, you know, and I think you're right. This could have the makings of a fairly good match with some spectacular spots and whatnot in it. And it almost pains me to say that because it's Logan Paul. But
yes,
anyway,
of course. Yeah. So Clash in Paris, we've got Survivor Series coming up. When is Survivor Series? Yeah. Survivor Series is November, and then we've got the Australia show. What is that show? Crown Jewel?
Crown Jewel, yeah.
Crown Jewel in Australia is taking place October 11th. So we've got this PLE, we've got the Crown Jewel event in October, and then we've got Survivor Series, and then we've got the show in December as at least the PLE level events, you know, that Cena will likely have matches on. That's not a lot of matches left. I mean, if you're not including television, of course, you know, like four matches, this being one of them.
And the Crown Jewel gimmick, if they keep it from last year, is the world champion versus the WWE champions kind of headline.
Yeah. Yeah. But as far as like feuds, I mean, we might only have room for at most four, if not even fewer than that for Cena. Yeah. So that's our thoughts on SmackDown overall. Your thoughts on the tonight's show?
Over-delivered for me. But I think largely weighted toward the beginning and the end of the show, because I really enjoyed that. I thought that and the crowd's interaction elevated all of that. The middle was a mixed bag. The tag stuff, not so great. The Wyatts, definitely. I mean, it was only a video promo, but it did sour me a little bit. Mm-hmm. But no, I enjoy in the round, I thought this was quite a pacey, breezy episode of SmackDown with some good star power.
Agreed with you. I thought it was easy to watch. And I agree with you that I think, like, just the addition of a babyface John Cena has seemingly added so much to the overall energy of the show. Not only did we get his, like a genuine babyface Cena promo that I thought was a very good babyface Cena promo, you got a John Cena match, unannounced, yeah, by the way, ahead of this, which maybe you can criticize, but having sold out the show, I don't know if it could be criticized that much. And it, you know, despite the lack of finish, it was still a John Cena match that people got to see in a tag team, mm-hmm, with Cody Rhodes. So in terms of star power, this show had a lot of it for that. I really like what they're doing with Charlotte and Alexa tonight. And the tag team division, again, they're making their name because of the in-ring quality, not because of the backstage stuff. But I wish the backstage stuff was better, too.
Yeah.
You know? So there's that. Those are our thoughts on SmackDown, everybody. And now we want to hear some of your thoughts in the Post Wrestling Cafe about your reactions to tonight's show, along with other questions you may have. And for that, we hop over to form.postwrestling.com for the XL edition. So join us then.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.